Welcome back to the And One. Jack Knorr is with us today to get into the Dallas Cowboys and how they should go about the Dak Prescott situation. Plus, Walker Anderson and I get into our Eastern Conference NBA All-Star reserves and take a look back at the amazing Anthony Edwards' poster slam-a-jamma last Friday. And so much more today on the And One. Just a reminder here to please share my podcast and to follow it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts at home. Plus, also go check out the YouTube channel And One with Ian Cooks. Go get that subscribe, go like, and of course, go comment as well. And other than that, let's get into today's great discussion. Of course, here is a word from our sponsor, Anchor. And welcome to the And One. We have Jack Knorr with us here to get into everything NFL. And so let's get right into it. And let's start off by talking about the new quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts, Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz, of course, was just traded to the Colts from the Philadelphia Eagles for 2 picks. And so, Jack here, I want to get your opinions. Like, what are your expectations for Carson Wentz entering this next year?
I think Wentz will definitely be a lot better than he was last year. I mean, the 16-15 interception ratio of this past year will definitely go away, in my opinion. I think the fact that, A, he is reunited with Frank Reich, a coach that he has had success with before, B, he has actually a very good offensive line now compared to the one in Philadelphia, so he's not going to have to run for his life and make stupid plays sometimes. And C, he's going to have a running game that will be able to provide some support and shoulder a significant load of the offense. So those three reasons are, I guess, the three reasons that I think that Wentz will actually be a much, much better quarterback in Indy compared to what he was in Philadelphia. I don't think he's going to get any MVP-like numbers. I really don't think he's going to, jettison up to the top 10 or top 5 echelon of quarterbacks in the NFL. I do think he'll be an upgrade over Phillip Rivers, who was actually pretty good last year for the Colts. Kind of underrated, in my opinion. He was, he wasn't a really great playmaker anymore. I think he was more of a game manager just because it was so late in his career. But I thought he had a pretty good run in Indianapolis. Obviously, they finished 11-5. And as the season went on, turnovers weren't really as much a problem for Phillip Rivers. So I expect for Wentz a similar performance to that, but even better, in my opinion, just because Wentz is younger. He does have the ability to make plays now because of his younger age, and also the fact that he has a much higher ceiling that we've already seen from him before.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense, Jack. And for me, Carson Wentz, my expectations of him, I have like the same as I usually do. I just want Carson Wentz to put up some numbers. 16-15 with that touchdown interception ratio was absolutely awful. And if I see that again, then Carson Wentz is done. I sell him completely. Right now, I'm cautiously buying him. I feel like Carson Wentz will definitely upgrade this year. Maybe not in like MVP type ways, I guess. I think like a 20 touchdown to like, I guess, 8 interception. That's kind of what I'm looking for. Maybe higher than 20 touchdown passes, maybe like 25 or something like that, 25-8. I think that's what we're going to look at for a Carson Wentz per se, because I don't think he gets to his MVP year. I don't think he has to, though, in fact. I just think that for Carson Wentz, it's about being a game manager. I don't think he needs to be that game changer or elite quarterback for the Colts. You look at Phillip Rivers last year, like you mentioned, Jack, he was really a game manager. He didn't really have to be that game changer for the Colts, because for the Colts, they already have those pieces. They have young running back Jonathan Taylor. Michael Pittman could be a game changer once he keeps developing for this Colts team and Frank Reich. You look at the defense, you got Darius Leonard. He's an elite linebacker, definitely a game changer. The secondary, they're growing as well. DeForest Buckner, he's a game changer. So there's so many other pieces on this Colts team that can be those game changers or elite pieces. So that's why I think Carson Wentz, he doesn't need to be that MVP player. He doesn't need to play hero ball like he was trying to do in the Philadelphia. He just needs to be that quarterback on the depth chart that is there, being able to throw those safe passes, being able to make the right plays, being able to hand off to Jonathan Taylor for big runs. That's what Carson Wentz needs to be, and that's my expectations of him. Nothing big, nothing too small, just right. I need Goldilocks here from Carson Wentz. And so, Jack, you were talking about the MVP conversation, and you don't really think necessarily Carson Wentz is in that for preseason here in our picks, I guess. But do you think Carson Wentz could put up those MVP numbers? Do you think he will be in that conversation mid-season?
No, I really don't think he will put up any numbers like that. I think that ship has really sailed for Carson Wentz as a player. Also, there, as far as like the MVP vote in that conversation, there just are too many elite or other elite quarterbacks out there, you know, like Rodgers and Wilson and Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, they consistently put up the MVP type numbers. And over the past 2 years, we really haven't seen that consistency from Carson Wentz, unless it's consistently bad. So, yeah, I'm not going to overreact here with him going to Indy. Like I said, I think he's going to be much better there, but I'm not asking him for anything too much in his first year.
And this question goes back to what I said in our last take, where Carson Wentz doesn't need to be that hero ball. He doesn't need to put up 33 touchdowns. He doesn't have to, because Jonathan Taylor, he can take some of the load. You have, like I said, the other players in the defense who can take some of the load. Other players on the offense. It's a great offensive line. You mentioned that earlier. He's protected, unlike he was in Philadelphia, where he was sacked the most in the NFL with 50 sacks. Deshaun Watson was second with 47. And so I'm looking at Carson Wentz, I'm like, he's in a better situation. He has the chance to put up those MVP numbers. He can, but he doesn't have to, and he shouldn't. He doesn't need to take those chances like he did in Philly. He can be cautious. He can be safe in Indianapolis. Frank Reich, he will definitely improve under where he's already had success with Frank Reich as his offensive coordinator. So he can, by all means, have success here in Reich's head coaching system, which is probably the same which it was in Philadelphia. So I think Carson Wentz, he's in a good situation for him. He's surrounded by good pieces on everywhere he looks. So Carson Wentz, he's on track to have a better year, like I said, but it doesn't need to be MVP ball, and I don't think it should be MVP ball, and I don't think it will be MVP football. And so let's keep it here, because we've had two bigger trades for quarterbacks in this offseason. It started off on January 30th with Stafford and Goff and the Rams and Detroit trade, and now we have Carson Wentz going to Indy and leaving Philadelphia. And so, Jack, which team, if I don't think it's going to happen necessarily, but which team with these new quarterbacks, the Rams or the Eagles, I mean the Colts, would win a Super Bowl first? Would you choose Stafford with the Rams, or would you choose Wentz?
This is kind of a tough question to me, but I think I'm going to go with the Rams. I'm kind of sticking to my guns here, because the Rams and the Chiefs were actually my Super Bowl 56 prediction that we made last Friday when Ohm was on the show. And I think I'm going to stick with that take here. You know, I did say they would lose that Super Bowl, but the fact that, you know, I am predicting at this point that they will go to a Super Bowl next season. You know, my philosophy is, if you make it to the Super Bowl, then you can win the Super Bowl, right? I definitely think that both teams are very, very well equipped to make it or win, make it to a Super Bowl at the very least. Possibly win. Both are just really, really well-rounded teams. Both have good O-lines that can provide good protection to the quarterback. I think both have now upgraded from the quarterback position last year that they had. And, you know, we don't need to forget that, you know, they were 10-6 and 11-5 respectively, the Rams and Colts last year. So anything, you know, if that was with Jared Goff and Phillip Rivers, then just imagine, you know, how successful they can be with Stafford and Wentz, just because both of those quarterbacks are upgrades to their predecessors. So also, you know, they both have great defenses as well. So I think that's going to play a large role in that. But as far as a long-term situation, though, I do think the Colts are much better equipped for the long-term because of their cap situation and the age of their team overall. on the Rams are just really, really cap strapped right now. It's going to be very difficult for them to keep together that elite defense that they had this past year. So we might see a drop in production from the defense in 2021 compared to this past season for the Rams. Granted, I think the defense will still be one of the elite defensive units in the league for the Rams, but maybe see a little bit of a drop because of, I'm sure they're going to let go of a couple players with the cap and all. But the Colts really don't have much of a cap situation. They actually have lots of cap room compared to the Rams, and I think they can maybe weaponize that this year and go out and make an addition. So if they were to do that, then, you know, maybe especially maybe a wide receiver addition, I think that would maybe propel them further into that Super Bowl conversation.
I'm sorry, Jack. I know I have the same Super Bowl pick. I had Chiefs over Rams in my Super Bowl 56 pick in that episode a couple weeks ago. However, Rams lost. Sure, they can make it to the Super Bowl first, but I said, who would win the Super Bowl first? And that would be the Indianapolis Colts. And I'm not saying that the Rams are bad whatsoever, because the Rams are terrific. They went 10-6 last year, made to the divisional round. Aaron Donald was hurt. That definitely had to contribute in some way to the Rams losing to the Packers in that game, because, of course, Donald wasn't healthy and really playing at his full potential. And so you mentioned the cap situation. I think that's going to be a major hit for the Rams. They can't bring everyone back this year. I'm assuming Leonard Floyd's going to go. James Johnson's going to go. I assume they bring back Troy Hill, but that's really it. You still have Jalen Ramsey. You still have Aaron Donald. You still have your key pieces on the defense. But then eventually, you're probably not going to be able to pay them in the next couple of seasons post that. I assume they'll pay one of them, but can they pay both of them? That's going to be tough. And then you look at everyone else around them, and then you can't pay those guys. And so that's the problem with the Rams. With the Colts, you mentioned it. They actually have a lot of cap room, despite what you may think about them. And that's going to be one of the things about the Colts that I like. They'll have to let go of Justin Houston this year, most likely. He'll probably walk in free agency, one of their defensive ends, and that's not terrific. But there's still cap room. You can bring someone else in, maybe like a Yannick Ngakoue or someone like that. Maybe you bring in Leonard Floyd off the edge from the Rams and add him to this Colts lineup. I don't think this Colts team is going to make it to the Super Bowl next year. Like I said, Chiefs. And for the Colts, it's going to be a hard road to ever make it to a Super Bowl because of that AFC toughness with Josh Allen and the Bills, Mahomes and the Chiefs, even Lamar and the Ravens. Baker and the Browns, the list goes on. There's a lot of tough teams, but the Colts are in that conversation. With Carson Wentz, there is that upgrade from Phillip Rivers. There just is. And so I expect the Colts I honestly could see this Colts team in the next seasons possibly making a Super Bowl run and being fantastic. Jonathan Taylor is just that good. Colts over Rams to win a Super Bowl in the next couple of years, for sure. And so now I'm going to turn the tables and talk about Dak Prescott. Now, he actually has an interesting situation as the franchise tag window begins tomorrow. Of course, Dak played on our franchise tag this year in 2020 and that was worth $31.4 million. And if he were to be franchise tagged this upcoming season in 2021, it would be worth $37.7 million. And so, Jack here, what should the Cowboys do with this quarterback position? Should they move forward with Dak, or should they go and look at free agency elsewhere?
Yeah, think after this past year and Dak's injury very early into the season, I feel like that management probably now understands how valuable Dak Prescott is as a player. What he's asking for as far as his asking price for a new contract, it's going to be a long-term deal is what he wants, and it's going to be a ton of money. And I don't think his asking price right now is really justifiable for his play. I really like Dak Prescott. I really do. But I don't think he should be, getting Patrick Mahomes level money, because he simply is not Patrick Mahomes. Right. And he really isn't near there. I think he is a B+, A- quarterback in this league, and Patrick Mahomes is just, you know, that much better than him. Mm-hmm. But that said, I do think that, you know, the Cowboys, they really just need certainty at the quarterback position. They have, you know, a pretty good O-line when it's healthy. Of course, that's the asterisk there. They have elite wide receivers. They've got a pretty good running back situation as long as Zeke Elliott does not drop the ball every game. And Tony Pollard actually is a pretty good story as well. So I think just to make the offense a little bit more formidable, they just really need to cement that quarterback position. And I think Dak Prescott's the man to do it. Also, you know, one of the alternatives I guess they have is to go get rid of Dak, let him walk in free agency, and then go back and get another player in free agency. I simply don't know who that would be. That would be, you know, a better option than Dak. I think Dak is definitely the best option on the table for the Cowboys as far as upside, as far as talent, and, you know, as far as knowing the system and the organization already. So I think, you know, giving Dak the opportunity and re-signing him to, I guess, what he wants, if you can haggle him down to a fairer price, I think that would be the best situation for the Cowboys organization. But if not, the risk, it just, or the reward just really outweighs the risk, in my opinion. So I would sign Dak Prescott if I were the Cowboys.
Absolutely, Jack. Absolutely. I mentioned all these the financial aspects of the franchise tag, and they could do that, but do they really want that hit on their salary gap? $37.7 million? That's a lot, and that's kind of roughly where they should probably pay Dak in like a deal, but sign him now. Sign him to that long-term deal. You had you mentioned this, Jack, but you saw the difference Dak made on the field when he was playing. Record-wise, it wasn't fantastic. But he was basically throwing 500 passing yards a game, and they were still losing. And I don't understand if you can't blame Dak for 500 passing yards and still losing. And he was passing like four passing touchdowns a game as well. He was absolutely insane for those first 4.5 weeks he was in. And unfortunately, he fell to that terrible ankle injury. Andy Dalton came in and blew it up for them, and also Ben Tanucci as well. Just all the quarterback situation. It was just a crazy year for the Dallas Cowboys. If that didn't show them that they need Dak Prescott, then I don't know what will. Then Jerry Jones needs to get his butt out of Dallas, and he's just done. Because Dak Prescott is the future for the Dallas Cowboys team. I don't understand how people just this franchise just doesn't see that. I just don't understand. You saw the difference he made. He was fantastic, and you still haven't paid him. Like there's also news that they haven't even been talks in the deal yet. They haven't been talking about an extension. They haven't been talking about that long-term deal yet. And that just confuses me because we've been talking about paying Dak for years now, and they just haven't done that. I'm confused at what the Cowboys are thinking. There's not necessarily another quarterback even close to Dak's level in this free agency class. Like, I'm not counting Deshaun Watson in that. Like, the next quarterback, I guess, like Ryan Fitzpatrick, Jameis Winston, Cam Newton. Do you really want to move forward with those guys? No, you don't. Dak Prescott is a top five quarterback when he's playing his best. He is. He's an elite quarterback by far. Not even a game manager. Not even close to that. He is elite, and he needs to be paid. For a long-term deal, I'm thinking 3 years, $105 million per year. I mean, not per year. Excuse me. $105 million total. That'd be very interesting. But I think that's kind of a good estimate of what we could expect from Dak. They could go $40 million. I think that may be a little that's too high, even though that's kind of, I guess, around where Dak's going to be. But I think the 3 year, $105 million is roughly a good estimate for a Dak deal. I think 3 years is the perfect length.
Yeah,
for a
I
Dak
agree
Prescott
with
contract.
A lot of what you said there. Obviously, I feel the same way about signing Dak. But I would just like to dispute your claim that at Dak's highest performances, I still don't think he's a top five guy. He's definitely top 10. He's definitely very close to that top five quarterback in the NFL level. But I don't know. I still think there are five guys at least ahead of him.
Name.
Okay. Not in any particular order.
Name them.
Rodgers, Wilson, Watson, Allen, Mahomes. There's five guys.
You take Josh Allen over Dak Prescott?
Yep. Hands down.
I don't know. Like,
yeah, I did.
You didn't say Russell Wilson, did you?
Really?
See, I would take Dak over Russell Wilson. I would. It's all also age, but I'm not including that in here because I'm not like signing. I'm not a GM. I'm not signing anyone. But I think Dak Prescott is a better quarterback than Russell Wilson. Like Russell Wilson, I think they're close.
Wow,
but I think Dak edges it out. I do. I think Dak is the best quarterback in the league when he's playing his best.
Wow.
But it's a true take. It's a true take. Dak is fantastic. I don't think people realize how good he is. And I don't think really many people really knew this guy entering. I mean, coming out of college, really. He was a fourth round pick. Really wasn't known. I actually picked him up in his rookie year for fantasy football, like when no one knew his name, and he was fantastic. He was honestly amazing. He led that Dallas team to a playoff in his rookie season as a starting quarterback. He was great. And Dak's really only gotten better since then. His team hasn't gotten better since. His O-line has broken down with the retirements and the injuries. His weapons have gotten better since that time with Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup even. But everything broke for Dallas Cowboys. Quarterback position, O-line. Ezekiel Elliott was terrible because there was no O-line. And so everything broke down. They got to sign Dak. Dak is amazing. But they just got to do it. They just got to budge, but they're not. And that's what's wrong with the Cowboys organization right now.
I don't know. I still can't get over the fact that you think Dak Prescott is better than Russell Wilson. I know Russell had his struggles this past year. I really think that was due to Brian Schottenheimer's offensive schemes and whatnot, hence them letting him go. But
Yeah, Dak but, had okay, Mike McCarthy.
My only knock with Dak, and this is – I guess kind of a significant thing, but this is my main knock with Dak is, you know, he's a stat monster, right? He puts up a ton of stats. He's really, really good for your fantasy team. But if you watch their games, you notice that a lot of those stats he puts up in garbage time. Like, you know, the Browns game, for instance, this year, you know, they were down. Well,
that was a close game.
Well, no, it wasn't a close game in the second half. And so the Browns, you know, they started, like, whether this is, you know, right of them to do or not, I'll leave that up to you. But, you know, they started kind of relaxing a little bit and, you know, feeling like, okay, we're up by 20-something points. We can just kind of lay back and watch the rest of the game, essentially. And then, you know, Dak Prescott is able to, you know, throw down the field and get a ton of yards and a ton of, you know, great stats that I guess make his stat line look a lot better than maybe it was.
Obviously, you do not recall the game as well as I do. You're still going to try to fight for a game. I don't think the Browns just sat back and relaxed. They were still playing the game of football. Not necessarily, like, full strength, but it's not like Dak was, like, blowing them up. That's because of Dak's terrific arm talent. That's because he had his weapons around him, and I know that helps. But Russell also has the weapons. He has Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. They're probably better than Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb together if we're talking about duos. And so Russell Wilson, he also struggled, and you see him trying to launch the ball at garbage time or whatever, and sometimes it's caught, sometimes it's not. But Dak Prescott, I don't understand why you're arguing this, because Dak Prescott was fantastic, and it seems like you're saying, oh, it's almost like he just was throwing at garbage time at the end of the game because they were losing.
And I mean, okay, yeah, like, he was trying to win a game. To him for, you know, getting those stats, but all I'm saying is that, you know, he tends to perform a lot better in the second half once the game is basically out of position for them to win, rather than in the first half when, you know, that's when the Cowboys need to take control of the game and stay in the game at the very least.
We could argue all day. We could argue all night, but that's the time we have today. Thank you so much, Jack, for joining the show.
All right, thank you, Ian.
It was so great to have you, and you have a good rest of your day. And welcome back to the And One. We have Walker Anderson here with us today to get into everything basketball. That's NBA, college basketball. We got it today, and we are going right into it now. We have the All-Star game very soon, early March, of course. And so the All-Star reserves, of course, the All-Star stars were released last week. So Walker and I, we will be giving our picks for our All-Star reserves. Today we are starting off with the Eastern Conference. Tomorrow we will do our Western Conference picks. And then tomorrow night on TNT during the games, the reserves will be released to the public. And so Walker, let's get right into our picks. Go straight into it. Give us your backcourt players out of the Eastern Conference.
So my first backcourt player, I think it's a very obvious pick. You should also have him here. And this is James Harden, the second best player on the Nets, who are rolling right now. I think he's leading the league in assists by far, which is something that we've always known that he's been capable to rack up lots of assists, but his role in the Rockets was mainly scoring, obviously, because he put up like 35 every night. But we see as he has these stars surrounding him now and really good shooters, just like the Rockets, I guess, but he's putting up like, what is it, like around 12, 13 assists? Like, it's a lot. And I think just that alone could help him be an all-star, but he's also putting up 24 points. And he's led this team to a few wins with KD being out the past few weeks. So I think, and he's a superstar. I mean, there's no way that James Harden isn't making the all-star game. So he's my first backcourt player. And as my second backcourt player, I have the Celtics' Jaylen Brown, who has, last year he was being kind of somewhat considered for a spot in the all-star game. He wasn't technically a snub, but he had some consideration. But I think this year he definitely deserves it. He's averaging 25 points, five to six rebounds, and four assists. And he's kind of had a breakout season. Tatum is kind of the definitive best player on the Celtics team. But Jaylen Brown is inching closer to actually that top spot, in my opinion, for that team. And although the Celtics have been skidding lately, I do have them having two All-Stars pretty much solely based on their talent. And Jaylen Brown has just had a really good season, especially shooting-wise. And he's a great player off the ball and offensively and defensively as well. So he takes my second backcourt spot.
Okay. So for me, again, I have the same two players as you, James Harden and Jaylen Brown. They've been absolutely fantastic all year. I'll start with Harden. In my opinion, Harden is that, like I said this, he's that connector piece for the Nets team. And he's really had to play terrifically so far this season with the Nets, with Kyrie being out for whatever reason, and KD being hurt, and with his health and safety protocols issue that he had a week ago. And so for Harden, averaging 25 points per game, averaging over 11 assists, he's been absolutely fantastic. And he actually, with the Rockets, he shot a lot of shots, but he didn't shoot them at a very effective rate. With the Nets, he's actually shooting 50% from the floor and over 40% from three. And that's really been, I guess, the difference maker for James Harden's game, along with the playmaking. It's his ability to score instead of just shoot the ball, if that makes sense. And for James Harden, honestly, I put him over Kyrie Irving in the All-Star starters. I would, from how he's been playing. Yes, Kyrie's been fantastic, and he's a showstopper, and we know that. And he's been solid when he's been playing. But James Harden is the key and that difference maker for the Nets, and that's why he should be a starter. And then Jaylen Brown, he's in that conversation for most improved player for a reason. He's comparatively to his career stats, Brown's statistics this year, this season, have been way better than those career numbers that he's already had this season. His points per game has jumped drastically. His rebounds, his shooting percentage has been fantastic, 50% from the floor, over 40% from three as well. He's been a difference maker. He's been key for the Celtics recently, especially when Tatum was out of the lineup with COVID, and that's when Jaylen Brown had to really step up. His team kind of lost a couple games, and so on and so forth. Celtics will hopefully get back on the right path. I know they will. They got Brown. They got Tatum. Both of them all-stars for sure. And so Brown easily in this reserves list. And so, Walker, you can continue.
With the front court. So, yes. As you mentioned, another obvious pick, Jason Tatum. He has my first front court spot because, for me, the other spots and the wild cards were kind of controversial for me. I didn't really know what to do. But Tatum, I think, is a lock. He's putting up incredible averages in his scoring, rebound, and assists. And he was out for a while with COVID. And he said that it impacted his game a little bit. But he's not really showing it. And he's been the leader of this team. And he kind of blossomed around the All-Star break last season. And some people were considering him like a top 10 player, which I don't think he is at all this season. But he's still a really good player. And he's... I think he's the easiest pick for the Eastern Conference front court.
I also have Tatum as that top front court player. And for me, it's kind of debatable here. I could have put the other two guys that I have at the front court for the reserves here. But I was like, Tatum's the best player out of these guys. And there's a reason for that. Like, Tatum's numbers might not necessarily be like, well, the Tatum's numbers are better, but you got to think of that COVID pause. You got to look at the records and all of that. Tatum, easily the number one front court player. And for me, 26 points per game, 49%, 7 rebounds, almost 5 assists per game. Tatum's been fantastic. Yeah, he has. And so for the Celtics, I'm really looking forward. I said this about Jaylen Brown, about how far this team could go, because I think this team has a lot of talent. It's just really just about putting it together and, like, being able to actually perform at the top stage, being able to upset a Nets, being able to upset a 76ers or even Raptors or someone up there in that top tier of the Eastern Conference. I think the Celtics are just right below, behind that, like, top tier of the Eastern Conference. But because of Tatum, because of Brown, because of these All-Stars, they're right there, and they should be in this game as well. So continue on with your front court, Walker.
For my second front court spot, I have Chris Middleton. And this is a play that I could see being left out of the All-Star game this year because there's a lot more like breakout players, especially in the East this year. But I think he still definitely deserves a spot. He's putting up averages of 26-6, and he leads the Bucks team in assists, which is kind of surprising. And he's doing this all on incredible efficiency. He's 1% short on his free throws from joining the 50-40-90 club. And he has like a 58% effective field goal percentage, which is really high for how many shots that he attempts. And him and Giannis have both been known to almost disappear in the playoffs in years. So hopefully and start getting wins, especially in the regular season, because this Bucks team is a regular season team, but that has not been the case this year. So hopefully they can get some wins, get back to the top five-ish tier of teams. Middleton is the obvious second-best player in the Bucks, who are still a pretty good team. And I think he deserves this second front court spot.
I'm sorry. Middleton is not an all-star for me this year. He's not. He's been fine. He's been efficient. But he's not an all-star. Look at Julius Randle on the other hand. He's my second front court player. He's been great. And look at the Knicks. They might not be as high as the Bucks, but the Bucks should be higher than where they are. No one expected the Knicks to be at the 7th spot in the East. Honestly, everyone thought the Knicks were going to be like 13th in the East. So they're basically doubling their expectations, per se. And for Randle, he's been fantastic. And you know what you brought up to me last week, Walker? You brought up to me that Julius Randle shares a new record of 20 points per game, 10 rebounds per game, and 5 assists, plus a shooting percentage from three of over 40%. Randle shares that with Larry Bird. Does Chris Middleton have that? No, he doesn't. And so Julius Randle, he's been absolutely phenomenal. 23 points per game, over 40% from three, 11 rebounds, 6 assists. He's been great. The Knicks are playing better than we expected. I'm not going to say they're playing great because that's not true, but they're up there in the playoffs right now, in that playoff bubble picture right now. And so I'm absolutely loving the Knicks. Randle's been a beast. He put up 40 the other night as well. So all-star for Julius Randle, and he's the second best front court player right now. And so, Walker, continue it with your front court spot. Do you have a third?
So for my third front court spot, my final front court spot, I have Domantas Sabonis, who way earlier in the season was considered almost as a fringe MVP candidate because of his incredible numbers. And he's still almost putting up those numbers almost every single game that he plays in. And he has been one of the NBA's leaders in double-doubles. He's almost a walking double-double. Every single time that he plays, he's going to get 10 rebounds and probably 20 points. And those are pretty much his averages. And he's led this Pacers team, who has had lots of injuries this season, to, I think, they're the 5th seed right now in the East.
They're actually 6.
To a pretty good, playoff berth. And his numbers may not be as flashy as someone like Julius Randle, who I actually do have, and I'll talk about him later. Or maybe even Adebayo, who I don't have and could be considered a snub. I could see where people could be putting him in there. But I just think Domantas, and his production has dropped off since his crazy start of the season, but he's still putting up really good stats. And he's still the leader of this Pacers team, which is a good team. So I think he takes my third front court spot.
And he actually takes my third front court spot as well, Sabonis. And for Sabonis, it's not like, yeah, like you said, he's not been putting those MVP numbers per se, but I think he's still an all-star. He's still been consistent. You said walking double-double. That's absolutely correct, and he's almost been a walking triple-double, to be honest, because he also can dish out the ball pretty nicely as well. He has nice vision, and that's what I noticed when I always watch this Pacers team, that Sabonis does have vision despite him not necessarily being the best passer in the NBA, per se. And so for him, he's almost there with that Julius Randle numbers with the same record with the Larry Bird fact. He's almost there. Just he needs to shoot the ball a little bit better from three. But for Sabonis, like, this Pacers team's in six in the East. That's probably where they should be, to be honest. But it's they were involved in a trade. They don't have Victor Oladipo anymore. So even without Oladipo and with their return, LeVert not being able to play right now because of a tumor or something that was found in his knee, and it was just bad. It was a cancerous thing, I think, is what they called it. But so for them, they've still been able to play at a consistent level. They haven't been as fantastic as they were to start the Pacers or Sabonis, like you said. But the Pacers are still consistent. They're still up there in the playoffs. They're six in the East. And that's because of Domantas Sabonis putting up fantastic numbers night in and night out. So Sabonis, another all-star once again for him. And so Walker, take it to your two all-star reserve wild card
For my first wild card spot, I have a pretty obvious pick who honestly may have like a 50-50 chance to actually get into the all-star game, in my opinion. And this is Julius Randle, who we already talked about. And yeah, he shares that incredible stat with Larry Bird, who is obviously a top player, a legend, one of the greats in all of basketball. And Julius Randle is right alongside him in the terms of numbers, not in terms of actual skill level. But I do think he deserves to be an all-star. He's pretty much the only star on the Knicks team who is surprisingly in the playoff race, as you mentioned. And he's putting up, I mean, he's doing well in all aspects of the game. I mean, putting up lots of assists, rebounds, and shooting, and just lots of points. And he's shooting very well from three. And for someone who came to the league as just a power forward, kind of back to the basket, he didn't do well his first few years in the NBA, but it takes some players a few years to develop, and that has definitely shown in players like Randle and even players like my other wildcard spot. But especially in Randle's case, who he developed a three-point shot, and he's become very efficient in that part of the game, and he's led this Knicks team to a playoff berth, so he takes my first wild card spot.
I'm assuming your other wild card spot is Zach LaVine, based on how you described him. Because Zach LaVine, he came into this league not being necessarily a huge name, but early on he was just known as a dunker because of what we saw from his dunk contest battle versus Eric Gordon. But Zach LaVine now with the Bulls, he's changed his game. He's become a do everything type of guard, and for Zach LaVine, what would the Bulls be without him? Like, would the Bulls be in the ninth spot in the East? Probably not. You have to think the Chicago organization and the fans need to thank LaVine for being there, because I don't necessarily know if he wants to be there, because it's not like the team is necessarily going to win a championship, because they're just not. But LaVine's been fantastic. 29 points per game. He's shooting over 40% from three, 50% from the floor, over five assists and rebounds. Like, use all superlatives for LaVine, because he's been nothing less than spectacular, and he has to be in this All-Star game. If he's not in this All-Star game, then it's rigged, bro. It has to be rigged, because this guy, he's been one of the best players in the league, especially in the regards of scoring, because he's putting up almost 30 every night. He's been like Bradley Beal in that regard, and so LaVine has to be in here. It's very similar to Bradley Beal, so put LaVine in the All-Star game, please. He deserves it. And so, well, who's your other wild card spot?
And you pretty much just mentioned pretty much all of what I was going to say. I mean, he came to the league as a dunker, and everyone knew he could score, especially from his leaping capabilities. But he, like Julius Randle, developed a very good three-point shot, an elite three-point shot. And he's by far the best player on the Bulls, who are surprisingly sitting at the ninth seed in the East. But he's also developed his game to get lots of rebounds and assists on top of that. And I don't know how many 40-point games he has put up this season, but it is almost like Bradley Beal in that it seems like every time he steps foot onto the court, he puts up at least 35 or 40 points. And he's led the Bulls team to many clutch wins in late-game situations and just many blowout wins as well. with his scoring capabilities alongside the other factors and keys that he kind of provides to this Bulls team.
Yeah, and I don't think it's just like it's really Levine on the Bulls because Coby White can put up points. It's just can't he shoot it at an efficient rate? That's been his problem, consistency. And then they faced injuries this year, but Levine has always been that consistent factor for them. He's always been playing. And so for my last spot, you don't have this player, and I don't understand how. Well, actually, I do. This guy is totally being underrated here, and he has been his whole career as a basketball player. And that is Toronto Raptors, Fred VanVleet. Yep. Yep.
Why? Yeah. What? So, yeah. Wait, so you're putting him over like Bam or Ben Simmons or Trae Young?
I'm putting him over Ben Simmons. Wow. I'm putting him over Trae Young. Yes. Okay. Look where the Raptors were. They were at like the bottom of the Eastern Conference. And you want to know where they rank now? Fifth in the Eastern Conference. Only behind the Celtics, the Bucks, the Nets, the Sixers. You are forgetting about the Toronto Raptors. And who is it because? Fred VanVleet is not Kyle Lowry, is not Pascal Siakam, it's not Chris Boucher, it's Fred VanVleet. He's been that consistent piece throughout this year. He's been fantastic. Not putting up necessarily the hugest numbers, only a little bit over 20 points per game and almost 7 assists. But you look at the Raptors, and you look at Fred VanVleet, and he's been amazing. There's no denying that. And he's always been this underrated piece. Yeah. He deserves this. He deserves it. And you can't doubt that. And so, yes, there's a Ben Simmons, but he's in a better situation. There is a Trae Young, but again, he has to do more because he's on a lesser, I guess, lesser team in the Atlanta Hawks, who actually have fallen to 11th now in the Eastern Conference. So you look at the better team, you look at the better player. I point out to Fred VanVleet and I say, that's an all-star, and he deserves it. That's why he's here.
Okay.
And so we can now move on from our All-Star reserves and take it to Friday's dunk. Anthony Edwards, oh my gosh. He put Raptors Utah Watanabe on a poster with a ferocious slam-a-dama, which has already been being called Dunk of the Year. And so, Walker, please, quick, just your thoughts on this dunk.
Obviously, it's a 10 out of 10. One of the best in-game dunks to we've seen in recent history, actually, in the NBA. He totally murdered Yuta. And I, as kind of a joke, I kind of like Yuta Watanabe. I have honestly never even watched him play, but I kind of like, but after that, he got rated. Anthony Edwards was above the rim, and he literally fell on top of Yuta Watanabe as he was going down from what probably is 40-inch vertical. I mean, that it was just such a sweet dunk. He totally destroyed Yuta. Oh, and it was like a tomahawk, like cockback too on top of it. Yeah, it was.
Okay, I'm my prayers are up for Yuta Watanabe. Like, oh my gosh, how are you gonna? You're never gonna be able to recover that. If it's gonna be dunk of the year, it's on SportsCenter constantly. It has to be play. The week for whatever reason, playing the day, whatever Sports Center does, had to be at number one because it was fantastic. Utah was just like, help me, I'm dying. If you see his face, he's just cringing. He's like, and it's just really awkward because his face is not necessarily where it necessarily wants to be in that play. And it's just oh my God. Literally, the reaction to when I saw it is, oh my gosh, Anthony Edwards has some hops, bro. He is honestly jumping over this player, then slamming it down, then absolutely collapsing on the ground right on Yuta. He is feeling the pain. He's definitely sore even today, even though it's like 3 days after the fact.
Dude, mental prayers state that man is probably ripped. More sore than his physical state, though. I mean, he got humiliated.
Like, if you look at, like, what this reminded me of was like a Vince Carter slam or like DeAndre Jordan.
But when this was like destroyed this Brandon like a Knight. Pure poster.
You know what I'm talking about? I mean,
there's another poster.
Yes, this was like a pure poster. Like I went up on my wall. I went up on my wall behind me. Like it'd be so cool.
Probably the best.
If I found the right picture, ever. Like the right angle.
This may be recency bias ever. In this, but I know other rookie dunks really stand out to me. So I mean, one of the top dunks that's from a rookie ever.
And
I
so
think. That was really nice dunk.
Hot take from Walker, everyone. Hot take. Okay, but let's keep it with the Timberwolves. Let's talk about them because they don't really get a lot of publicity because of where they're ranked. And so let's talk about that then. And so, of course, Anthony Edwards, he's a rookie, like you mentioned. And so, where do you think his career is gonna how good can Anthony Edwards be? Because I think I talked about this a little bit ago about how good he could be and how I think he should be in the rookie of the year conversation. But do you still have the same feelings?
He should be in the conversation, but he's definitely not gonna win it. I think over LaMelo, who's been playing fantastically. But is that even a word? He's been playing fantastic. But Anthony Edwards coming into the draft, I think everyone knew he was going to be number one. And he still has that number one talent, and he's definitely not the best. I mean, he's averaging like 12 points. He was averaging like 15 points earlier in the season. But he's going to continue to develop his game. He's going to have to get a lot better in other aspects of his game. He's obviously kind of a pure scorer, and he can do that from all three levels in the paint, as we saw with the dunk. But he can also knock down lots of threes. He went over to LeBron a few games ago, which is kind of cool. But he's going to have to develop his defensive capabilities, which he has lots of potential on that side of the ball with his crazy athleticism. But he's going to have to develop his defense, develop his teamwork and leadership, and especially his playmaking as well. I mean, he's probably two guard, but he could play like maybe even point guard or a small forward. I mean, he's kind of versatile in that, in terms of like positioning.
Regard.
But he's going to need playmaking in all those positions. And obviously, most rookies aren't that good on playmaking and don't get too many assists. But I think if he develops that, he could be really good in this league and potentially a future All-Star.
You mentioned playmaking ability, and because of that, you make me think of LaMelo. Like, LaMelo, for him, I guess you're saying how, you rookies don't usually have that playmaking ability, which I don't necessarily agree with. I think there are rookies who have that capability. If you look at, a Trey Jones, per se, I know Trey Jones doesn't play in the NBA. He plays in the G League, but he's a fantastic passer out of Duke. He's playing in the G League for the Austin Spurs right now in the bubble. Go check him out. He's been absolutely fantastic, putting up double-doubles, almost getting him out. So he's been fantastic in the G League. Warriors. The bubble. Okay, he did that, once. Trey Jones.
We need to start talking about the G League. Yeah.
The G League Ignite team has actually been looking nice, but let's focus on the Timberwolves. We're not talking about the G League right now. And so, I think I don't necessarily agree with the term of saying rookies are poor playmakers. Anthony Edwards, he doesn't have that quality yet, but he really didn't have that quality coming out of Georgia. At Georgia, was there really anyone around him for him to pass to and actually rely on? No, there wasn't. So Anthony Edwards was a pure scorer coming out, and I think that's kind of what the Timberwolves needed, though—a guy who could score the basketball other than Carl Anthony Towns. Because they got rid of D'Angelo Russell, they got rid of Wiggins a while ago, so they just didn't really have that guy. And so I think Anthony Edwards was the right fit for them. He just has to kind of develop, find his groove, and he's been starting recently, so that's good for him. He's kind of getting into that rhythm, getting into that consistency, and hopefully Anthony Edwards could get into that pure rookie of the year conversation, because I think he can be and he should be. But yeah, you're fine. And so. But I want to talk about the Timberwolves team now as a whole team now, because look, Carl Anthony Towns, he didn't really get a lot of games to start. He was been hurt. He had COVID, and so he just had a rough season and a rough year too, because many of his family members have been affected by the virus or died. And some it's just he's had a terrible year. And so, what do you think the potential is now that Cat is back and playing?
If we're talking about solely this year, they can't do anything. But maybe jump two spots to the 13 seed. I mean, come on. Exactly. I mean, even the 14 seed in the Rockets and the 13 seed in the Thunder are both decent teams. And I'm saying their kind of max ceiling for this year is maybe a 13 seed. I think they're going to stay at 15. But if we're talking about the next three, maybe even 5 years, which is the Timberwolves timeline for being a real good team, because their whole core is based upon D'Lo, Cat, and now Anthony Edwards, who are all really young players and all have lots of promising potential and lots of promising plays. And their three stars have only been together for however many games have been played this season. But there hasn't been – I wonder how many games have actually been played with all three of them in the starting lineup. It's probably not even that many because of injuries with D'Lo.
But what I meant earlier is D'Lo's hurt, so he really hasn't had, really built up that connection with Anthony Edwards yet. I didn't mean that it was gone, excuse me. But so for Russell, Cat, and Edwards, I think it's a fair point to make because they really haven't played a lot of games together, if any, actually. And so that's a really fair point to make. And so maybe the Timberwolves team could be good in a couple of years. I don't think so. I just think they're always – I don't see this team winning a championship necessarily in, like, the next five years unless they, like, make something – if they get, like, three number one picks in a row. And they got three number one picks in a row and they just go crazy with those, then maybe. But if they can't do that, then no.
Get Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, what?
Maybe. Cade Cunningham is basically Anthony Edwards, kind of, in the fact that he's, like, a score mentality.
Yeah, no.
I don't necessarily think he'd be the right fit, and I don't really think Evan Mobley is, too. I know those are, like, the projected one or two picks, and I think the Timberwolves will somehow end up with, another top pick again because they will be, like, the worst team in the NBA, and it's because of so many factors. But this Timberwolves team is finishing last in the NBA this year. I'm sorry. They're just not good. So – they're not going to do anything, especially in the Western Conference, which is a lot harder, especially just if you look at every team in there. And so let's take it now to the Nets and Clippers, 112-108 last night. It was an absolutely phenomenal game throughout the entire day of it. But there is the one play at the end. Kawhi Leonard drove from outside the three-point line into the paint, extends his arm a little bit, scores a layup. James Harden does this exasperant flopping motion where he falls backwards, and it's called an offensive foul on Kawhi. Walker, give it to me straight. Was this a real foul on Kawhi Leonard, or was this just James just being James and flopping? So,
after rewatching this multiple times, I mean, there was no offensive foul, and I don't think that it should have been called. I see. If I was the ref standing under the basket and I saw James Harden fall like that, I would be convinced and tempted to blow that whistle as well. But, and obviously, everything is 20/20 in hindsight. And obviously, in hindsight, it was definitely not a foul because Leonard, he may have had some extension, but James Harden acted as if it like hit him in the chin and he was nowhere near that. So, but he sold it very well, and that's what he does as a basketball player on the offense and apparently defensive sides of the ball. So you can't totally blame the referees. It was kind of a bad call, but I didn't watch the earlier parts of the game, so I didn't know if Kawhi was maybe pushing off earlier and the refs knew that he would may have done it again or something like that. But I don't think it was a foul. I mean, but I could see arguments from both points of view, but I don't think it was a foul.
Walker, don't even pull that 50-50 point of perspective. That is not a foul by far. It was absolutely blasphemous. Like, the play in full speed looks like it's in slow-mo. Like, Kawhi is, like, just slowly moving to the basket, and he moves his arm a little bit, and James Harden just goes, wah, and just falls backwards so fast that the play was just totally different. And it just didn't – I was like, oh, my gosh, really? Did they really call that a foul? That's terrible. There's no way. It was the slowest run-up. There's no way he pushed him that hard. And he didn't even push him. He kind of touched him. Contact's now not legal in the NBA, apparently. Like, come on. I'm not blaming the refs on the result of the game, even though it kind of is because that play. But plus the fact that Paul George wasn't at the end of the game because of minutes restriction, quote-unquote. Terrible there from the coaching, I guess, but they care about the health. That's good, but I really don't think Paul George, your second best player, should be sitting on the bench. And so I'm just upset at different angles here. Definitely not a foul. Don't even know what the refs were looking at. Apparently, they were looking at
the real question. The real question for me is why soda. Are you putting James Harden on Kawhi Leonard? That's my question. When you have like the Jeff Green, who's probably a better defender than James Harden, you probably have. I can't think of.
I mean, not necessarily. Like, James Harden is a solid defender if he actually wants to play it. If he wants to play the defense, then he can play the defense. Is that a lot of the time? No, it's not. But usually when it comes down to like the last minute,
but James Harden will terrible turn a different defense switch out, on, and then he let him blow right by him. And yeah. Kawhi is obviously a good offensive player, but that was terrible defense. Didn't he?
It was, and that's probably why I had to make up for the flop, the exasperated backwards.